Welcome to the Small Business Podcast with David Michael and Daniel Miller. Tonight, we're going to get into something very exciting that I've run across a couple people offering, and then there's a couple people who have been offering it to David. And that is...
work for hire!
All right, David, how are you doing?
Good, I wasn't sure if you wanted me to say that, or you're just pausing for effect.
No, I'm waiting, I'm trying to be interactive with this whole thing.
Awesome.
I don't want it to seem like I'm the one at the beginning giving all the information. You're involved with it too, because you're a good person to accommodate, and you're getting better at the yes and stuff. So I think you're being bumped into the introduction if you can do that well.
Wow, well, cool. I was wondering why I showed up every week to talk to you as we talked about business stuff. Is that why I'm here?
We're not really learning is business stuff. We're here to do improv work.
We're here to do improv, and our topic just is business over and over again.
Yeah. Yes and, David. Yes and.
Awesome.
So what would we mean by work to hire, David? Could you give a brief description about it? And you and I can delve into where we found stuff out about that.
Sure. Basically, work for hire, you see it a lot of with freelancers, often with creative works. For example, in my earlier business with Two Deck Entertainment, I would contract out artists and writers to create content for me, and I'd have them under contract that says, okay, you're going to do this work for me, I'm going to pay you X amount, and you know, you meet these deadlines and all that other stuff. And in there, it says there's a transfer of rights, there's a transfer of ownership. Because normally, if you create any original work, by U.S. copyright law, it's automatically yours. It's automatically copyrighted to you, even before you file it with the government. Now, you want to file it with the government so that if it ever comes up in court, you can prove it. You know,
right.
So it's not just your word versus theirs. But by law, you create any original work, it is automatically copyrighted. So, since they're not a regular employee of the company, they're working independently as a contractor for me. For my company to be able to use that content however it wants, to be able to sell it and make money so that I can keep paying these guys, if I want to put it on t-shirts or anything else, I need to have the copyright, the right to copy it, as the business sees best fit. So
right.
What a work-for-hire agreement does is it says, in exchange for the value of X amount of dollars, I get the value of the copyright. And the rights legally transfer over from the creator, from the freelancer, to the company. So even though another person created it, legally speaking, it's as if the company did, because now they own the copyright.
Okay, so then let me ask you this real quick before we go into that with a little bit of... well, let's go and do the copyright thing at the end. I want to have a couple quick questions about that transfer.
Okay.
But what you're telling me is that work to hire, you're basically having the person work for you until you have enough money to hire them?
Well, no, not necessarily. I mean, it's a difference between an independent contractor and a regular employee, which is basically how you pay them, whether you withhold taxes or not, if you control their hours, things like that. So if you require they come into an office, they have to be there between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m., and you're going to pay them $10 an hour to do all that for you, they are an employee, and you have to withhold taxes and pay additional taxes that they don't even see taken out of their paycheck. People think, yeah, you know, it's like, oh, man, the government's ripping me off. They took all this money out of my paycheck. Yeah, well, your employer is matching whatever was taken out of your paycheck. So if you spent $100 in taxes on your paycheck, your employer spent another $100 you didn't even see towards your taxes on your labor. So
get me started on that.
Yeah. So anyways, so don't feel bad. You're not the only one who's it's a shared tax cost. And the employer pays taxes on its income and all this other stuff. So yeah.
Throw in the part where we have to pay for health care insurance.
Oh, I was hoping to avoid that, but you can take it away if you'd like.
No. I'd like to say that. So go ahead, David. Give us some more ideas on work for hire. I'm learning a little bit more. So then let's go ahead and dive into this, and then you can give me some more information so I can see if I have any stories for that. Recently we had a merger of Disney and Marvel. Marvel Comics was bought by Disney.
Right.
And since Marvel has a whole slew of characters, I think, David, you want to try and name one of them?
Marvel's characters?
Yeah, just one.
I see. I like superheroes. I could name a dozen or so easy, you know, right off. There's the Fantastic Four. There's Hulk. There's Spider-Man. There's Iron Man. X-Men. The Avengers. Take your pick.
I will go ahead and throw in Wolverine of the X-Men, and you can see how many different characters there are inside of that entire group. What I'm trying to get at is that each of these individual characters was created by one person, usually not just the owner of the company. And in the case, I think, of the X-Men, the actual person who created it, he's trying to get money back from... He's trying to get his copyright back from Marvel. And he is trying to wet his beak a little.
Well, that's been happening a lot with Superman, actually, which is part of DC Comics. You know, the guys who came up with the Superman concept way back when sold it for, you know, probably was the standard fee back in the day for a new name. And DC didn't know it was going to be the huge hit that Superman remains to be this day. You know, so they were just... That's a cool character. We'll buy it. We'll see what happens with it. Most likely. I don't know. I wasn't there. But I'm not that old. but the family, the descendants now, they're like, we want more money for Superman. It's too huge. You're making too much off of him. We feel we didn't get – our family didn't get a good deal when Superman was sold to you. So – there's all this legal battle, and I think, like, anything that was copyrighted before a certain date, after so many years, the copyright expires and it becomes public domain, or it has to be renewed somehow, or something like that. And then after that date, they changed the copyright law a little bit. I'm not a total expert on these finer details. If you're curious, there are lawyers who specialize in this kind of thing. But, yeah, this has been on kind of an ongoing thing between DC Comics and the Superman heirs.
Okay. So then in this case, how does the work for hire apply? Because you're saying that when you go ahead and have someone work for you, you're going and paying them for the work you have. So let me go ahead and rephrase that, David.
Okay.
How does that apply for the current situation with Marvel and what you're doing? So let's say you have a person, he creates a character, I don't know, let's call him Next Star, and he travels back in time and fights aliens, something like that. I know that's not very original, but I'm just coming up with it off the top of my cuff. If anybody comes up with it, that was mine, that was mine. so David, what would, if you go and buy that from me and say, hey, look, this is the best character going since sliced bread, let's go ahead and see if I can buy this. You go ahead and develop it into a multi-million-dollar product, and then I come back later and say, hey, you know, you didn't really pay me, but it was. Can you give me some more money for it?
Like, you know, you created a character, sold it to me for, you know, we'll say $100 or something, and then it turns into this multi-million-dollar success, and you want more money out of it. Now, a lot of times what work-for-hire contracts will include in cases like this is royalty payments. So even if it does really well, you're still going to get a piece of the action. They don't have to say that, but they commonly do.
Okay.
But it goes back to whatever the contract that we both agreed to and signed says. And if it says, I'm going to just pay you $100 today, you're going to transfer over all the rights in exchange for that $100, and there's no residuals, there's no royalties, it's work-for-hire agreement, the transfer is done, then technically, legally speaking, that's that. You made your $100, and your character, Next Star, whatever you just call them, becomes a huge hit, partly because of what my business did with it. And the thing is, businesses don't know truly what's going to be a big hit until they market it and try to develop it. And there's all kinds of stories and characters and things like that that they're buying that go nowhere. So part of what the business has to do is recoup its losses from all those failures. So it's okay that, you know, from a business perspective, that, well, we're making a killing on this one, but we lost a lot on all these others, and that's just the nature of the game. But to the individual, the starving artist, the poor writer or artist that wants to make a living doing what they love, which I have total sympathy for, and I totally support. Just read what you're signing and make sure you do agree to its terms. And if you think it really is going to be a huge hit, either ask for more money up front or ask for points on the back end, meaning, you know, you get a percentage of either involved in some kind of profit sharing, or you get some kind of royalties or residuals, or you get stock ownership in the company. I mean, whatever you guys agree to on paper and sign is binding. So if Daniel, if you said, like, for example, say I'm a new company, I don't have much money to throw at you in the beginning, but we still want to do this work for hire agreement, we could agree, all right, I'll give you $1 today, but you get 50% of any revenue generated from this character. You know, if we turn it into a comic book or whatever, you get half of those sales. Or I could say, all right, I'm not going to give you any residuals, no profit sharing, but you get 1,000 free shares in my company as part of the exchange.
Right.
Basically, what's behind this work-for-hire agreement is there needs to be some kind of exchange of value to both sides. The company is getting value for they're getting this original content and obtaining the rights to it. And the person that created that content and that's giving it over needs to get something back of value. And if I recall correctly, by law, the minimum is $1. But, you know, unless it didn't take any time or effort and you don't really care, I would ask for more than a dollar. But it's whatever we agree to on paper in the contract and sign for. So you could say profit sharing, residuals, stock options, name credit. Technically, I'm sure you could probably even work it out where after so many years, the rights revert back to you. I don't know. It's what's in writing and you guys sign for is legally binding. So it's whatever you and the business you're selling it to agree to. But typically, you'll get a flat fee up front and commonly some kind of residuals later. You know, X percent based on whatever as outlined in the contract.
Okay. Well, that sounds like it's fair.
Well, yeah, I mean, it all depends on... I had one guy... One time, not every freelancer is excited about work for hire because they feel that it's disproportionate. And one time I was looking for a musician, someone to compose scores for background music for these multimedia webcomics we were doing, this Flash-based stuff.
Right.
And I found this one guy that, you know, he was pretty good. He wasn't fantastic by any means. He was a college student, but, you know, he had some talent. And, you know, I wanted to do it. And I, you know, showed him the work for hire contract, and he's like, "Oh no, I won't do work for hire." And I'm like, "Well, that's what I'm doing with everybody right now. You know, it's just the system my business is using." And he's like, "Well, I don't want to be the guy who writes the next James Bond theme song that's used everywhere all the time and making millions and millions for the company, but I'm not seeing another dime of it."
Yeah, I can see where he might be upset about that.
So yeah, so it's. You know, like I said, you got to work out some kind of fair trade arrangement. I didn't have – he either wanted like outrageous like $10,000 or something up front. I'm like, dude, I'm starting this part-time with what money is left over from my job while I'm going to school. I'm doing this out of pocket. I don't have $10,000 to give to a single musician on one single project that may or may not ever give me a financial return.
People are funny.
So, yeah, some people get greedy and they're like, "I want all kinds of stuff." And then the business says, "Well, that doesn't make sense to us now. That's not fair to us." So it's negotiation. You find something that's fair. What I ended up doing later, because I found out in, you know, this arts and entertainment industry, the comic books and all that kind of stuff, there's actually a trend where fewer people want to do work for hire, but they're willing to get themselves produced for no money now if it means they co-own the rights or they're guaranteed a higher profit sharing on the back end. So once I started discovering this and learning about it as I'm learning more about the industry, I set up a new system and I said, okay, I'm not going to pay anybody anything. It's easier for me on the business because now there's less upfront risk. I can get teams of talented freelancers to work together, create a product, and I can market it and try to sell it online. And if it doesn't sell, it's no financial loss to me. And they understand that's a chance that they might not make any money off of it. Right. But to make it worth their while, they have shared rights. They have shared ownership in the product, co-creator rights. And they're guaranteed a much higher profit-sharing percentage than they would ever get on royalties.
That's not bad.
So, yeah, so they're sharing the risk with me. But if it is successful, they have a much higher return in the end.
Yeah, I think that's probably the better way to go. For the very simple reason, you're able to take the risk and spread it out. And
right, like I said, I was able to produce more.
Yeah.
Because I didn't need as much upfront cash. And people love the idea. They're like, great. And you know, and then when I ended up, you know, closing down that website after a couple of years, and I made a little profit, just not enough to be worth my time. You know, I close it down. I tell everyone, okay, here's your last profit sharing check, and we're done. According to the contract we signed, I only had the right to publish it and market it on my website. So they had the rights to the characters and to the story. They just allowed me to use it. That was my shared rights. And when I was done with it, it's fully theirs. They could put it in their own book and sell it if they want, or do nothing, or put it on their own website. Because I had chosen to take it down off mine. And according to the contract, once I'd done that, all rights reverted fully back to them.
So what do you think should happen here in the Disney case?
Well, from my understanding, it was just a... I don't think anything's really going to change. It's going to be business as usual. They're just combining together so that... I think it's a good thing for Marvel because it's going to give them more financial resources to market themselves and come up with even better products. And, you know, who knows? We might see Iron Man on bathroom towels in Disney hotels. I don't know. But I think no one's planning to tamper with either side of the business. It's just going to be... It's a good asset. It's at a good price. Marvel is doing amazing things. They've been doing amazing. As a stock market investor, it's driving me nuts. Years ago, this would be probably about 10 years ago now, I was looking at buying stock in Marvel. They were at $4.50 a share. And I was a broke college student at the time. I didn't have any money to invest in Marvel. So I just watched them for a while. And now they're at like what, $45 a share? Somewhere around that?
It was a good sale price.
So I'm like, yeah, I could have made 10 times my initial investment, but and now that they're being bought out, would have converted to Disney stock, and I mean, just, it's... Well, you know, common story, the opportunity that got away.
That's exactly right, and that's why you can't look at it too much.
But yeah, I've been watching Marvel off and on over the years, and I looked at... They had a PowerPoint prospectus back then. And they shared, you know, here's what we're doing now, here's what we're planning to do, and movies and video games and stuff coming down for like the next 10-plus years. And I'm looking at it, I was like, wow, this is... If they make quality when they do this, this will be great. And sure enough, they've been doing far more better ones than bad ones, in my opinion.
They got their act together is what it came down to. I mean, if you looked at some of their previous movies and whatever it came from, it was just crap. I mean, look at the previous... Did they make a Spider-Man... And other stuff that was coming out of that department was just not working for them. But they got their act together. Look where they're at now. They were able to sell for $45 million. I mean, for $4 billion. So, good for them.
Yep. Now DC Comics needs to get their act together.
Yeah, I'm surprised that Marvel didn't buy them out.
Well, to my knowledge, DC Comics isn't publicly traded themselves. I know they're owned by Warner Brothers, which is another reason why Disney maybe bought out Marvel so they could compete more directly with Warner Brothers on that arena. But, you know, I love some of these DC Comics characters, like The Flash, Green Lantern, Batman, you know, these are some great characters there. And I would love to see movies and games of equal quality to what Marvel's churning out.
It would be nice, and all they need to do is get their act together. So, until then, we have to deal with it. Which is sad, because both these agencies have good product. They just need to figure out how to sell them better.
Right, right. I grew up on DC Comics. My dad was much more of a DC Comics fan. But as, you know, I became an adult and I started looking at it, I'm like, man, Marvel is doing much better. They've got their act together, like you were saying. So, DC, that's your challenge. Step up to the plate. You can do it. We believe in you. You just got to do it.
Just stop sucking. Very simple. I mean, they did a good job with the first Batman reimagination, but then they came back with the second one, which was just crap. Come on, everybody. It's Batman, not the Dark Knight. I mean, the Dark Joker story. Anyway, you've been listening to the Small Business Podcast with David. David, did you have a story you want to tell about this?
Oh, yeah. Just
before we bring it home, because I remember you told me the reason why we're doing this is because we had you had a story.
Yeah, it was kind of a creative use of work for hire contracts. You know, as you may know, to our listeners, I'm saying this. As you may know, I'm actually returning to college to finish my degree. I never finished that before. I bought into that whole, I don't need a degree to be successful. I'm just going to start a business. And then I, you know, my senses realized I can do both at the same time. So, so yeah, I'm back in school. And just yesterday, I had this paper to write. And I really just did not feel I would rather be working on my business. You know, it's a lot of time management here. We've talked about that on other episodes. And I just really just wasn't excited about this paper or this class. So I'm at lunch, and I'm talking to one of my friends. I said, how would you like to, for $20, to write a paper for me? It's only got to be 500 words. It's not that bad. I mean, I ended up doing it, and it took me like 45 minutes. It was no big deal. But, you know, I was imagining it was going to be worse than it turned out to be. But I just didn't want to do it at that time. And I was like, I'll pay you. Just write the paper for me. And they're like, oh, but you can't. That's plagiarism. That's, you know, we'll get expelled. It's like, no. I said, we'll sign first a work for hire agreement. I will contract you to write this. You will be employed by me. In that contract, you will transfer over all copyright to me in exchange for the money I'm paying you for this paper. And legally speaking, it's as if I had written that because I own the rights to it. We were all talking about this, and this became a little interesting philosophical debate about how would that work in the real world, and would it fly, and would the teacher still flunk me because I didn't personally write it, even though legally speaking, it is my paper. And then I thought, well, if he flunked it, then, you know, I can, you know, take the university to court, and it's just, but I was like, well, who's got time or money for that just to prove a point?
Especially as a college student.
But yeah, but it was a fun little idea. So I texted you, Daniel, like, this would be something fun to talk about. So if someone out there listening wants to test the system and you've got the time and resources and you want to prove your point, you know, let's take copyright law and contract law and see if and how it applies. You might want to talk to a lawyer first, make sure there's not some loophole I'm not aware of, but I think it should work.
If anybody does come up with it, they can always go ahead and check us out on the web at smallpod.blogspot.com, or if they want to, they can email us. Well, you can leave comments on our website, or you can email us at smallbusinesspodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to check us out on the web, you can do so also by going to facebook.com and searching for
The Small Business Podcast.
Sweet. David, what do you want to sell this week?
My Pocket Spirit Guide, How to Break Through and Overcome Your Fears. It's an audio CD I've got on my website. Came out earlier this month. So that's at spiritualsmarts.com.
And as usual, I'm selling Ranger Tire Paint. You go to rangerpaint.com, you can turn your tires from boring old sidewalls into exciting, flashy sidewalls that say your mind. If you want to, rangerpaint.com. I dare you. So, until next week, I'm Daniel.
I'm David.
Have a good week.
And thanks for listening.